You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So in these difficult times, planting food crops and native plants gives our communities an opportunity to increase healing and resilience. So we're drilling down on the basics for how to start a garden on any plot of land. Have you been gardening during the shutdown? What is coming up now? What do you want to know about how these up and down temperatures have affected our plants? Are you a beginner gardener? What advice do you need to start? We're at 800-642-1234. Melinda Myers is a horticulturist and the author of more than 20 books on gardening. She hosts the online series How to Grow Anything. Melinda, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure, and talking gardening is always a wonderful opportunity, and we have so many new gardeners. I'm excited that we can give them a helping hand.
And it's just so fun in these days of spring. Every day you look out, and there's something new popping up. I know my hostas are reporting for duty. My ferns are coming out. So every day there's something new to see.
You know, I think that's one of the joys of gardening. And, you know, I think we all look for a reason. We garden in the Midwest, in the upper Midwest, where the winters can be harsh. But those first signs of life in the spring give us hope. Winter's over, the growing season's ahead. And then when fall comes, we have a little bit of a respite so we can plan for next season. So I'm with you. I'm out every day looking for any signs of what's new and popping. And my daffodils have been blooming for over a month now.
Oh.
The one good thing about this cool spring.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been slow and steady, but we've had some freezes here too, unexpected ones. What does that do to our plants if we didn't cover them?
You know, some plants that have been growing and they're fine, they'll be fine. I lost my yellow magnolia, not the plant, but the blossoms. It was in full bloom, and that really last hard frost just knocked the blossoms. Fortunately, I don't depend on the fruit. My peach trees look like they survived. So some things were able to tolerate it. Some people were lucky enough that their plants were small and did some covering. And other plants, maybe you saw some damaged leaves. Fortunately, a lot of those perennials will push through. The real test are those annuals. So everybody was out early shopping. We just couldn't wait to get our tomatoes and peppers and all those flowers. And hopefully people covered them or brought them inside. You know, it's still pretty cool for some of those plants. So some people may be replacing a few things, hopefully not. And hopefully the worst is over, but it's Wisconsin. You never know.
You know, that is so true. Let's take a call now. Jeremy is with us from Whitewater. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Doing well. What's on your mind about your garden?
I currently bought a Venus flytrap, and I was just wondering if there was any procedures to taking care of it that were different from, you know, any outside plants.
You know, Venus flytrap is a little bit challenging, so good for you for taking on that challenge. It's a tropical plant, so it's perfect for a terrarium. I'm assuming you're growing it in your house. So high humidity, moist soil. It likes protein, so any flies that come by, some people feed a little bit of ground beef. But they're a little challenging, but that's what gardening's all about, right? Pushing the limits a little bit, Jeremy. So high humidity, so that's why a terrarium would be good, or just group it with your other plants. Or misting only lasts for about 30 minutes, so I like to put plants like that on a gravel tray. So a saucer, fill it with pebbles. When you water, the excess water collects in those pebbles. As it evaporates, it increases the humidity. So I use them under all my house plants because I'm kind of lazy, so I don't have to pour off the excess, and then it increases the humidity. So it sounds like you're a gardener, so that should give you a good starting point, and then just kind of give it a little extra TLC.
Jeremy, where do you have it now?
Currently, it's on the windowsill with a lot of light, just because I just recently got it. So I just wanted to know more about, you know, kind of keeping it alive, because I didn't want to, you know, I just recently got it, so I didn't want it to go to waste.
Have you got one before?
No, this is my first one.
First venture into the Venus flytrap. Melinda, have you cared for one before?
I have, and I'll admit, Jeremy, mine lasted a few months, and then I kind of started traveling, and it didn't get the TLC it needed. So that's why if you put it in a terrarium, that's going to really extend its life. Sundews are another one that I occasionally see, some of the tropical. We have native ones in the bogs in northern Wisconsin. but there are some sun drops available too, and I've used those to capture the fungus gnats that sometimes I get on my house plants. So that was kind of fun too, and I kept that with some of my other plants and kept that alive for a good couple of years as well.
Well, Jeremy, thanks and good luck. We have Melinda Myers with us. She's a gardening expert, decades of horticulture experience. You can join in with your questions. Are you a beginner gardener? Maybe you've been doing it for decades. What are you struggling with? What are you growing right now? And what advice do you need to help you cultivate your garden? Reach out to us at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Christina now in Glenwood. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. I live in western Wisconsin, St. Croix County, near the Twin Cities. I've installed a large arbor. Can you suggest a hardy variety of honeysuckle vine that blooms spring through fall?
Oh, I have a favorite. It's called Major Wheeler. It's a cultivar of our native honeysuckle vine. It's not invasive, so people who hear honeysuckle might worry, but it's not invasive. It's a cultivar. It has deep red flowers. The hummingbirds love it. Mine is outside my sliding glass doors by my bedroom, between my bedroom and my kitchen, and I get to watch the hummingbirds nectaring on those flowers all season long. So Major Wheeler, deep red flowers, doesn't get the mildew like a lot of the honeysuckle vines do. It'll take full sun to part shade, and the aphid, the hummingbirds help eat the aphids that occasionally attack honeysuckle vines, but I haven't seen the problems that I've seen on some of the others. So that's one of my favorites, and it does bloom all season long.
Oh, it sounds gorgeous. Christina, what do you think?
Perfect. It's on my list. I'm going to get two. Thanks so much.
Wonderful. I'm with you.
Thank you so much for calling, Christina. Well, Melinda, let's get into the garden plot. Do you need a sizable plot of land to start a vegetable garden?
You know, even a few containers work very well. So I was a small space gardener in the city of Milwaukee for many, many years and really was able to produce a fair amount of produce and have flowers. And, you know, I crammed as much as I could into that small city lot. But even a 5-gallon bucket, drill some holes in the bottom, fill it with a quality potting mix, pop in a tomato, and you'll have plenty of tomatoes to eat. A small 4x8 will really do a good job. One of the keys, I think about what vegetables you like to use regularly in your favorite recipes or eat fresh. So a tomato. And one tomato plant can produce quite a few fruit. Maybe a couple of peppers if you like sweet or hot peppers. And then maybe, you know, whatever else. I like to make ratatouille, so I always have eggplant, tomato, and peppers. And maybe a zucchini. And the cool thing is there's a lot of container-sized plants out now. There's a tomato called Patio Choice Yellow Cherry Tomato. Only grows 18 inches tall, produces up to 100 yellow cherry tomatoes.
Wow.
Yeah, my favorite zucchini is, I know, isn't that amazing? That's a lot of cherry tomatoes.
That's a lot of cherry tomatoes. Go for it, plant.
And then Ostia zucchini, A-S-T-I-A, is a bush zucchini suitable for a container or a small space garden, produces lots of zucchini, so one or two plants will do you, will have plenty to eat fresh, to stir fry, and to make zucchini bread, but it's a small-scale plant. So you can do some of those plants that maybe you gave up on in the past, and there's even fruit plants suitable for containers in small space. Raspberry shortcake is a 2-foot-tall thornless raspberry, great in a pot, great in the soil. Baby cakes, blackberry is another example. So lots of options for small space containers, any size garden.
Very versatile. We have horticulturist Melinda Myers helping us out in the garden this morning. Did you start seeds indoors in recent months? What are you growing now? When will you transplant seedlings into your garden? And what questions do you have about when to do it? Do you work at a garden center? How is it going? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Melinda Myers here on the Ideas Network.
Go
Good morning. Here's a check of your weather for this Thursday. We have a chance of thunderstorms this morning across the southern part of the state and patchy fog possible in the northern areas. On and off showers could happen today with mostly cloudy skies. We've got highs ranging from the mid-60s to the low 70s. Tonight, more rain is possible across the state. We'll see lows dropping into the 40s and the 50s. And tomorrow, dry weather statewide, though we could see a few lingering showers, highs in the 60s and 70s.
This afternoon on Central Time, Christopher Kimball from Milk Street Kitchen is back with us for advice on living the simple life in our cooking and beyond. Join the conversation. That's today on Central Time from 3 until 7.
Support for WPR comes from the Alliance. The Alliance is a not-for-profit committed to making healthcare more accessible by directly contracting with over 25,000 providers. the-alliance.org/WPR. Support also comes from Capital Lakes, a continuing care retirement community offering all levels of care. Located in Madison, close to the Overture Center, Monona Terrace, and UW Campus. More is at retirement.org.
If you're just joining us, we're spending the hour on gardening here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Novelist Perdita Buchan wrote about gardening this week for the Christian Science Monitor. Her grandmother's garden in Britain was a refuge in the Second World War. And listen to this writing. It is so exquisite. As the wider world remains closed to me, the garden is, as it must have been for my grandmother through long years of darkness and doubt, a comfort and a hope. A small protected moment to set against the vast uncertainty of those days. What does the garden mean to you? Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. We have horticulturist Melinda Myers, who stays with us. Melinda, we heard from Jane in Rothschild, emailed us this morning. Jane says their niece wants to grow hydrangeas in pots on her front porch, and Jane's niece plans to bring them into her basement in the fall. And Jane's feeling a bit skeptical of this idea and wonders, do you think this will work?
You know, one of the things about gardening is you can do everything according to the books, and it doesn't always work. And then you break the rules, and it does. And it's some of the challenge. As long as her basement is nice and cool, she waters just enough to keep the roots from drying out, she probably will have luck, especially if she's growing one of the more southern types, the big leaf types, the ones that are pink in our alkaline or sweet soil and blue in our acid soil. You know, I think as long as she knows that she's experimenting and looks at it as part of a learning process, so if she's successful, she celebrates, and if it fails, then she knows not to do that. One of the ways I overwinter a lot of containers, especially when I lived in the city, I'd plant a lot of things in pots, trees and shrubs and, you know, perennials, and I would just group them together on my patio, then pack them full of wood chips or take my annual baskets, petunias and things like that, set them around to insulate the roots. The other thing you can do is if you have an unheated garage, bring them into the unheated garage. The key is water whenever the soil is thawed and dry, which, you know, we get those warm spells in winter, nobody mm-hmm. thinks of, right? You don't think about watering plants in your garage, and that's another way to overwinter. So, you know, I'm kind of with her. I think she might have some easier ways to overwinter it than the basement. The problem is our basements are usually too warm. I'm worried it'll start growing. She probably doesn't have good enough light to keep it growing successfully, you know. But, you know, you never know. She might be just lucky enough to find that right spot in the basement.
She was asking what temperature that they should be stored at over winter. Is there any ideal temperature?
You know, usually more like the 40s, 45. Okay. And most of our basements are probably, if we're lucky, in the 60, 65 degrees. So, yeah, if she has a corner spot in her basement, maybe where there's both outside walls, some people even kind of insulate that to keep the cold air in. You know, so I've seen people take coolers and cut out one side and put like bulbs they're storing or things like that inside and then shove that cooler up against those two walls so it stays pretty cool. And that's going to be critical to keep it alive and through the winter. So cool spot as she can find.
We just had a caller who missed the name of that yellow cherry tomato that you recommended for growing in containers. What was the name of that tomato again?
It's called Patio Choice, okay. And if you go to All America Selections, it's a nonprofit organization that trials vegetables and flowers, and they've got a lot of good container plants on there, and you can find out more about that. So it's All America Selections, and they show good information on all their winning varieties. They're tested nationally and selected for home gardens, not for, you know, transporting across the country and selling in the store. So I think you'll find lots of fun stuff on there.
We have Melinda Myers, horticulturist, with us. She hosts the series How to Grow Anything for the online learning website, The Great Courses. You can join in with your questions. Have you been gardening during the coronavirus shutdown? Have you tried anything new? How did it go? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Erin now, who's joining us from Stevens Point. Hi, Erin.
Hey, good morning. I just have a question about vegetable gardens and the benefit of a raised bed as opposed to individual pots or in the soil vegetable garden, what the pros and cons are and recommendations on a first timer.
Great. Erin, thank you. Well, let's start from the beginning, Melinda. What is a raised bed garden?
So one of the things we do, a lot of us have less than ideal soil, most of us do, so elevating the garden and bringing in topsoil or creating your own through a system called lasagna or hugel culture, and we'll talk about that in a minute, is a way to just, you know, instantly have good soil to garden. So that's one reason people raise their gardens. The other reason is instead of being on your hands and knees weeding, planting, and harvesting, you can sit on the edge of your garden, or some people even elevate it, use elevated gardens like a trug or something like that, so it's even waist high, so it's easier on your back and your joints. So that's those are a couple of the reasons people use raised bed gardens. One of the things to keep in mind is when you buy your soil, if you buy soil, sometimes it can be worse than what you're gardening in. So you always want to get a reliable source, talk to friends and neighbors, a blended mix, something that's been mixed for use in a raised bed so that you end up with better soil. And then keep in mind that when you raise that garden bed, it's going to warm up faster, dry out faster. So you need to monitor the soil moisture a little more regularly than you would in ground. Containers are kind of the same idea, but a much smaller scale. So they're going to dry out even faster. I do a lot of containers. If I can't put a raised bed or on my patio, even though I have more land now to garden, I keep pots near my windows so I can bring in the hummingbirds and the butterflies, have a few herbs and vegetables at hand when I'm cooking or entertaining. So containers just allow you, they're a little bit easier to move around, a little more flexible, but they're smaller spaces. So it's a little more challenging to design a big garden. They all dry out quicker, so you always want to start with a quality in a container potting mix because it's so small. There's this cool new product called wool pellets, and it's a sustainable thing. This rancher in Utah, his wife, this is the story he tells, his wife was mad he wasn't watering her container garden. They were drying out. So you can picture this, right?
Yeah, I can.
and so he goes, I got all this wool wasted wool, and it holds moisture. So he shoves it in the containers, found it extended the time between watering, worked with Utah State University to get it tested, and they discovered that it extended watering by 25%. So they take the waste, things that can't be made into clothing, and they make it into little pellets, so Wild Valley wool pellets, and so they mix that in like a half a cup to a gallon of potting mix, and it extends your time between watering. And you could do it in your raised bed as well. So, you know, looking for those things, mulching the soil as well, putting something like a thin layer of shredded leaves or evergreen needles to help conserve the moisture works in a raised bed, in containers, as well as in the garden. So those are kind of the advantages. Making your own pot, making your own soil, you know, because finding quality topsoil can be challenging. So lasagna gardening.
Yeah, that no dig, is it like,
yeah,
no dig gardening? Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so basically it's doing sheet composting on a little larger scale. So you could even do this inside your raised bed or create your own. You know, the first layer is newspaper or cardboard to kind of kill the weeds and any grass, prevent it from growing through 8 to 10 inches of anything you would compost, leaves, fall leaves, the outer leaves of vegetables that aren't good enough to eat, things like that. Cover it with a little compost, fertilizer, another 8 to 10 inches till you get at least 18 to 24 inches. And I did this just as a raised bed without any structure. And I'll tell you, I had the best tomatoes and peppers I've ever grown. Few weeds, and you're improving, you're building your soil right there. And so a lot of people are doing that in their raised beds instead of buying in soil. Now, it's going to settle, so next year you're going to add more, but it's a great way to create your own soil as well. So that's just another option for you.
Erin, what do you think? Any other questions about this venture into raised beds?
No, I don't think so. It was a great tip. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Erin.
And have fun. You know, it's a learning experience for all of us, no matter how long you garden. I learn something new every day. So look at it as a great adventure.
Melinda, can we talk about herbs for a moment? I know I planted some herbs just recently in the last week or so, put some basil in as well. But parsley is coming up just on its own. I was really excited. I put some mint in. Do you have any, and this is all growing outside, do you have any suggestions for growing herbs this season?
You bet. Basil is very sensitive to cooler temperatures, so you're going to want, that's one you're going to want to keep an eye on. And especially for those of us that can't wait, I use a lot of floating row covers. They let air, light, and water through but trap the heat around the plants. Also, the lightweight ones are great over cabbage plants and broccoli. It keeps the cabbage worms off, so it's good control. Bush beans, cover them with the row cover. You won't have problems with Japanese beetles eating those. So it will protect your basil. Now, if you only have a couple basil, you probably don't want to cover the whole garden. How about take a milk jug, cut the bottom out, take the cap on and off as needed to ventilate, and that'll help keep things a little warm. So if your basil is not looking as good as it should, it may be getting a little chilled. Parsley and mint, take it cold. And it is fun, isn't it, when they come up unexpectedly?
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
It is great. Parsley is a biennial, so the second year you may even get flowers. Some people don't like the flavor. It's a little more intense, but I think a free plant, it's good.
Oh, bring it on. Yeah. Melinda Byers, our guide. All questions about your garden. Do you have a plot in a community garden? What have you noticed from your neighbors? Share your community gardening stories as well with us at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back with more from Melinda Myers and maybe hear from you after this news update on the Ideas Network.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. President Trump says companies that were ineligible but received forgivable loans under the Federal Paycheck Protection Program have until today to return them. As NPR's Windsor Johnston reports, that emergency fund was passed by Congress to help small businesses make payroll amid the coronavirus pandemic.
The program has been criticized for sending thousands of dollars to national chain restaurants and other major companies and institutions that have access to bank loans and investors. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin last month said the purpose of the program was not social welfare for big business. He also warned that the government would audit loans of more than $2 million to ensure that they were valid.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis says his state is prepared to welcome any and all professional sports teams to practice and play when leagues such as Major League Baseball resume play. The governor says he can't guarantee spectators will be allowed. DeSantis has been credited for taking early coronavirus precautions, including banning COVID-19 patients from nursing homes.
I just want to be able to know that we have procedures in place that if someone goes to visit their mother, that 2 weeks later we're not going to have 50 infections.
Arizona's governor is making the same offer to major sports leagues beginning Saturday. Dow futures are down more than 100 points this morning. This is NPR News.
This is Wisconsin Public Radio News at 6:31. I'm Keeley Boltina. Wisconsin families are under a lot more stress lately. Anxiety about COVID-19, as well as many more families being stuck at home and under more economic pressure, has made parenting more difficult. As Madeline Fox reports, family resource centers are trying to adapt and get more help to families.
Just like schools and many workplaces, family resource centers are turning to virtual solutions like Zoom parenting classes and support groups. Their core mission of helping and stabilizing families so they don't need child protective services to intervene remains the same. Joyce Felker, head of the Parenting Network in Milwaukee, says that's more necessary than ever.
I think we have to be very sensitive to all the stress and all the burden that's being put on parents, and how can we support them and strengthen them? And how can we get the message that it is okay to ask for help?
Child abuse and neglect reports are down, but experts say that's likely because kids aren't seeing adults outside their families. They say instances of abuse and neglect are just as common, if not more so, because of all the stress on families. Madeline Fox, Wisconsin Public Radio.
We Energies and Wisconsin Public Service say electricity use was down 7% between the time the state's stay-at-home order went into effect and early May. Media Relations Manager Brendan Conway says the biggest drop in demand comes from small commercial clients like restaurants and barbershops. But not all segments are using less energy.
We know as a fact, both anecdotally and now through some of these hard numbers, that home energy usage is up.
The companies expect residential customers to use about 4% more electricity in the second quarter than they originally forecasted. Home energy use isn't the only thing that's increased during quarantine. Some municipalities say they're collecting more trash. In both March and April, the city of Sheboygan picked up about 13% more residential garbage than in the same months last year. There are 10,902 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Wisconsin. The State Department of Health reported the latest numbers yesterday afternoon. That was an increase of 291 positive cases. That's 6.3% of total new cases. And 38 home facilities and nursing homes are under active investigation in Wisconsin for COVID-19. You are listening to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin-Madison, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association. Whether you laugh along with Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, or feed your mind with To the Best of Our Knowledge, you'll always find something to enjoy on Wisconsin Public Radio. Find our program schedule and listen online at WPR.org.
It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Quick programming note here. You can find the latest coronavirus news and a hive of related stories and analysis, the latest on the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruling. It's all at our website. Go to WPR.org/COVID. So right now we're spending the hour in the garden with horticulturist Melinda Myers. Many nurseries and seed companies across the country have reportedly struggled to keep up with the demand for vegetable plants and seeds this spring. What questions do you have about gardening? Can you find the seeds you need? Perhaps you want to know more about your lawn care, your grass. Maybe it's a question on pruning. Join in at any point, 800-642-1234. Horticulturist Melinda Myers is our guide to the garden. So, Melinda, we're talking about mint there. I just love it in my iced tea, and I get pretty good results in a somewhat shady spot. What else should we know about mint?
Well, mint's a wonderful plant, very vigorous, sometimes a little too vigorous. So I always recommend putting it in a container or in planting it in the ground in a place it can be contained, because once you plant it, you will have a lot of it. And so it's just one of those I always like to warn people, and I always can tell who's grown it when I say put it in a pot in the middle of a cement patio and you'll have great success. So just wanted to warn people, you obviously know because you've grown mint. It's wonderful for beverages and desserts. The fragrance is great. It's a fun plant for kids to grow. You know, I've grown it in sand buckets with my grandkids just because it's so easy and fragrant and tasty. Another fun one is stevia, the sugar plant that you take a bite.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I always say when I get hungry for a candy bar, I have I eat one of the leaves and at least that's gives me another break for 30 minutes before I need that chocolate, right? And then if you are growing in containers, and one of the things I forgot to mention to Aaron is fertilization is important too, whether it's in the ground, in a raised bed, or especially in containers because we're watering so often. I like to use a low nitrogen, slow release fertilizer because it stimulates slow, steady growth as opposed to lush, succulent growth insects and diseases attack or interferes with flowering and fruiting. So I'm a low input gardener. I prefer not to call myself lazy, but I am. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I like to use a fertilizer like a Milorganite when I plant my containers, then maybe midsummer if needed, only twice, once or twice a season. So looking for something that works for the way you garden. And a soil test is always a good idea.
Let's take another call. Judy is joining us from Little Chute. Hi, Judy.
Hey, good morning, guys. I hope everybody's healthy and safe.
You too.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I have a question about my grass. It's white, not mold and mildew white, but white like somebody painted it. Now, the DNR felt that it was due to climate change and some plants being unable to do photosynthesizing. And I don't know what to do with it. Should I tear it up? Should I leave it? I sent in a soil sample because I don't know what to do with it, and I'm afraid for the grandkids and my dog.
So if you rub a blade of grass, does it come off? Does it look almost like baby powder has been sprinkled on the lawn?
No, it looks like somebody painted it. Nope.
And does that scrape off? There's a mold... disease called slime mold, but it does look like paint, but it will come off.
No, it doesn't. I know come off.
It doesn't come off. So what I would suggest you do is the University of Wisconsin Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. I would start with a picture, send it in. Brian Huddleston is in charge of the lab, and what they typically have you send in. Do you have access to the internet?
Yes.
Okay. If you look up UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. It will show you how to take a sample and where to send it. There is a fee. It could be a disease, but typically those look more bleached as opposed to white, like someone painted it. But you might want to start with a photo. Take a digital photo, email it to them. They'll probably tell you if they need to see a sample. The website tells you how to send that sample in. Without seeing it, it sounds like it's not powdery mildew. It sounds like it's not slime mold. I'm not saying that climate change hasn't affected our plants, but we would see a more widespread issue if that was it. So I'm feeling like you really need to get the experts to do it. But I'll tell you, Brian and his team are excellent. They'll get back to you quickly. So it's UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. There is a fee when you send a sample in, but you may want to start with a photo just to get some guidance from him.
Well, Judy, good luck. Start with that picture
and
we'll see what happens from there. Thank you for calling. Let's go to Becky now in Wind Lake. Hi, Becky.
Hi, how are you guys? Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question for Melinda is about compost, specifically the kind that you can turn. I do have a compost pile, so I'm well-versed with how, but unfortunately, my pile is gotten to the point where it starts to turn annually, so I thought it might be advantageous to get a compost tumbler, and then therefore I can also move it around the garden, but I'm having a hard time deciding or trying to figure out what is the best brand, what is the best style, and I'm wondering if you have some insight.
Great question. Composting is a great way to recycle all those plant scraps and yard debris and things like that, as long as it's not diseased, insect infected. I know you know this, but I'm sharing this with others. No invasive plants, no perennial weeds, because if you don't compost rapidly and hot, those things will survive. Tumblers are wonderful options because you can load them at waist high, unload them, turn them much easier than with a pitchfork, turning a compost pile. There's a couple things I would look for, either doing two bins or a dual bin composter, because one of the things I find with tumblers is you keep adding fresh material, So you never have the finished product. And people always complain to me, it's never done, it's never done. The dual bin system has two bins, and then one you just keep stockpiling, while the other one is where you've got it full, you've added your compost moisture, and you're turning it. When that's finished, you use that compost. Then the one you've been stockpiling, you turn into your active compost pile and just keep switching back and forth. Or you could have two tumblers. That would be another option. For people in the city, you want either their metal ones available, but there's some really hard plastic ones so that you don't have to worry about rodents getting at your compost.
Melinda, how big are these tumblers?
There are various sites. There are some that are like 50-gallon size. I have a dual bin that's very, it's probably each side is equal to maybe 5 gallons. So it is a little more portable, especially if you're thinking about moving it around. Gardner Supply is just a great place to get some ideas and suggestions. They have a variety of compost bins, tumblers, and then in-grounds that can give you some ideas of some of the different, you know, compost options out there. So you can really get them in a variety of sizes. And you want to make sure you pick one that's going to work for your situation and then also for your abilities as well.
Yeah. Becky, does that sound like a plan?
It definitely sounds like a plan, because one of the things that I was confused on was having single or dual chambers. And it makes perfect sense why you'd have a dual chamber, because then you can use your finished product that much sooner. I don't know if you're allowed to maybe recommend a brand by chance, because I know some of these go upwards of $300 to $400, and I don't want to spend that money unless it's something that's really reputable.
Yeah, well, you know, Gardner's has a wide variety, so that's if you're going to buy them. I haven't really looked for plans online. When I started my career many years ago, a lot of people were converting drums into, or there's the food grade things that you may use, that I haven't really seen any plans online, but I bet there's some somewhere out there. But you're right, they can be costly, so you want something that's got a good reputation and good reviews and a good quality material. My dual bin composter I have has been sitting outside and being used for the last 5 years and looks brand new. So it's really held up well for me. You know, I have an in-ground compost pile. I do trench composting, but I use that near the house for some of my vegetable materials. So I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, you know, Becky, always... thank you so much for the call. We have horticulturist Melinda Myers answering all your gardening questions this morning, composting, grass, you name it, 800-642-1234. Sheila from Madison wants to create a fairy garden, Melinda, one of those with a bunch of figurines, and Sheila is looking for tips on getting started. What do you think?
Oh, fairy gardens are so much fun, and I'm not sure they're just the kids that are enjoying them as much as the adults. A couple things that I've seen that have been really fun. If you have maybe a little shaded area that you can't grow anything, I'm seeing a lot of people develop these fairy gardens or fairy gardens in those areas, or gnome gardens in those areas, so putting their little figurines and picking some shade-tolerant ground covers and maybe some woodland plants. Otherwise, if you're doing it in a container, allows you many different options indoors or out. So if you're going inside, a lot of the garden centers are now selling small-scale tropical plants, and then you can keep those pruned so you can create a small-looking tree out of a tropical plant, maybe some baby tears ground cover, and just kind of set the scene that way. So indoors, you're going to want to look for tropical plants or succulents that give you that sense of being outside. If you're moving your container outdoors, then you're going to want to look for plants that are suitable for the sun or shade, and those plants that you can manage, maybe some annuals if you're not going to keep it year-round outdoors. And then just trying to find those plants that, one, fit the growing conditions, two, give you that look and feel of miniature trees or shrubs or ground covers. And if you're doing this with kids, sometimes to get kids to be excited about gardening, we have to hold our breath, let them pick what they want, provide a little guidance, and then just let them go with it. Mm. Because, you know, it's about enjoyment. My ex-husband was also in horticulture, and the first year she gardened, I had to keep him saying, no, let her do this. We want her to have fun.
And to experiment.
It's about her having fun. And And so it's always a challenge when you're a gardener and you want your kids to embrace it. Well, she isn't a gardener now as an adult, and so are her kids. So just always keep that in the back of your mind when you're trying to get your kids excited about gardening.
We have horticulturist Melinda Myers giving us gardening tips this hour. Still time to ask your question as you work on your garden at 800-642-1234. What planting do you have trouble with each year? What do you want to know? Still time to talk. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with Melinda Myers here on the Ideas Network.
Here's a glimpse at today's weather. We've got a chance of thunderstorms this morning across southern Wisconsin. Patchy fog is possible in the northern part of the state this morning. On and off showers possible today with mostly cloudy skies. Highs are in the mid-60s to the low 70s on this Thursday. Tonight, more rain is possible across the state, lows dipping into the 40s and the 50s. And tomorrow, a few lingering showers in the early morning, then dry weather statewide. This is WPR.
Coming up this afternoon on Central Time, COVID-19 statistics keep rolling in from day to day, and our guest is worried that we're getting desensitized to the numbers. He makes the case that we need to remember the people behind the statistics. That's today on Central Time.
The country has settled into social distancing, but there are still lots of things we don't know about COVID-19. I'm Ari Shapiro. Join us tonight for the National Conversation with All Things Considered. We take your questions, how to stay safe, when your state might reopen, and we'll bring in experts to give you answers. The National Conversation with All Things Considered from NPR News.
Tonight at 8 on the Ideas Network.
Supporters of WPR include Wilmar Chocolates and Pottawatomie Hotel and Casino. You too can ensure the future of WPR programs by being a business sponsor. Find out more at WPR.org/sponsor.
Support also comes from TDS Custom Construction, committed to maximizing a home's potential through design and remodeling of kitchens, baths, and additions since 1985. TDSCustomConstruction.com/WPR.
It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Horticulturists say gardening is a great way to reduce stress during the pandemic. We have horticulture expert Melinda Myers with us taking your questions. Let's go to Michael now, who's joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
What do you think about bugs? Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So one thing I've heard is that, like, vanilla, that spiders hate vanilla, the smell of vanilla. And, I mean, I don't know if it's true or not, but it's something I heard, but I was wondering, are there any other plants that keep pests away? They're like maybe something instead of using like insecticides all the time, maybe like I could maybe grow a small plant in my house to keep the bugs away.
So if you're worried about insects in your house, there's a couple things. House plants, there's a lot of debate on whether these are true. Some people say geranium oil. They're using geranium oil as an insecticide. Some of the scented geraniums, you know, may help to some extent. I've seen some things saying lavender and basil help. Haven't seen the research, so I'm a little skeptical. I'm, like you, looking for alternatives, so I don't have to use harsh insecticides because I'm trying to bring good things into my garden, and I don't want to use them in my house because I have a cat and grandkids. So a couple of things that you might want to consider, sometimes tolerating damage, sometimes hand picking. A strong blast of water will dislodge a lot of things like aphids and mites that are on your plants. So if you can get them in the shower, I usually put a plastic bag over the pot so I don't have soil down the drain. A strong blast of water in the sink. Insecticidal soap has been used for many, many years. It's soap that's good at killing insects but gentle on plants. Some year-round spray oil is a fine, lightweight horticulture oil that can be used on plants during the growing season and indoor plants. And what's nice is it suffocates the insect. So if you've got problems with, say, scale, which is hard to control, it suffocates the eggs that are underneath that hard shell, so it kills all stages. Fungus gnats, especially inside, can be very annoying. Okay, you've battled those, too.
Yes.
They look like little fruit flies, and they're always in your face. Well, mosquito bits, which it's Bacillus thuringiensis, israeliensis, it's a strain of a soil bacteria that kills the larvae of fungus gnats, mosquitoes, and black flies. It's been labeled for use on houseplants. So you sprinkle this on the soil surface, and when you water, it takes it in, and it's organic. And so you just need to do a couple applications. It kills the larvae, not the adults. The adults don't live that long. So that's one way of managing them organically. So those are some things that I try to do to manage the insects in my house. And if I do find those annoying lady beetles in my house, I usually put them on my house plants so they can eat any bad insects that might be on those plants. So that might be a way to try it. One of the things, if you're experimenting, test things on a leaf or two. You know, when you read things on the internet, they don't always give you all the detail. Just because it's something we use for cooking or making food or cleaning our house, it may be harmful to our plants. So always test a leaf or two before you spray anything on. And hey, growing some lavender and basil in your windowsill, even if it doesn't keep the bugs away.
Lavender, my favorite.
Mine
Bring
too.
It on. Michael, thank you so much and good luck. Josh from Green Bay called and wondered how much seed is too much for a lawn and whether it's better to combine new seed with an existing lawn or to start from scratch.
You know, one of the things with the lawn, in this time of year, things are slowly starting to green up and fill in. One of the things I would say is if you've got at least 60% of your lawn is growing and grass and less is weeds, then it might be easier to overseed your lawn using a mix. And usually your seed mix will tell you the rate to apply, how much to apply per 1,000 square feet or 100 square feet. So always check the grass seed label. The benefit of overseeding is you're not starting from scratch and you don't have that mud and that bare soil. If you do end up starting from scratch, you want to make sure you manage those weeds because the weeds are going to take off faster. It takes about 3 to 4 weeks for bluegrass to sprout. Most seed mixes have a little bit of perennial ryegrass. That comes up in a week to 2 weeks. And some will have fescue. And again, that's another 3 weeks before that sprouts.
Do you recommend putting down any straw?
If you're going to start from scratch, definitely mulching. That will help with the straw. You can use those floating row covers to keep the birds from eating the seed, and it will help keep things and get it going faster. If you do overseed, you're going to need to either rake that soil so you get good seed-to-soil contact. Some people will core aerate first and then seed because then you get good seed-to-soil contact, or dethatch. Your lawn's going to look awful, but it will definitely get rid of that old grass, make it easier for that seed to get down to the soil, and you'll have better luck getting it to fill in.
Melinda, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it and hope all those new gardeners keep at it and all those veteran gardeners share your passion. Help others that are just getting started.
Melinda Myers is a horticulturist and the author of more than 20 books on gardening. Many people are trying to cope with the stress, fear, and anxiety stemming from COVID-19. As Danielle Kading reports, organizations that work to connect people with mental health services in Wisconsin are seeing a surge in calls for help.
Max Blaska has been struggling. Since the coronavirus pandemic hit, the 43-year-old Madison resident has suffered through days when he hasn't been able to do anything. Blaska has been living with anxiety and depression since he was a kid, and the COVID-19 crisis has flooded him with paralyzing thoughts. Blaska, who was furloughed from his job and lives alone, misses the interaction with others.
Thoughts of loneliness that adds to depression, or thoughts of me not having a job that adds to depression, just magnifies with the quarantine because you're isolated, you're by yourself.
Blaska is not the only one who's struggling.
Thank you for calling 211. How may I help you?
From mid-March to mid-April, just under 19,000 calls were made to Impact's 211 line. The private nonprofit helps people in crisis in Milwaukee and 9 other counties. More than a quarter of calls were for healthcare or mental health services. Sue Beck-Rickoff is Impact's chief operating officer.
People aren't normally in this situation, and they're really not equipped to deal with it very well. The other thing that I think is that people that have a pre-existing anxiety, depression, or other mental health issue are really feeling more acute symptoms.
That's what worries Beth Clay. She's executive director of New Mental Health Connection in northeastern Wisconsin. She and community partners began tracking crisis calls to law enforcement. Now they're sounding the alarm after calls from people having suicidal thoughts or attempting suicide doubled in Outagamie and Winnebago counties from mid-March to mid-April. She says the pandemic has created a perfect storm of risk factors for suicide deaths.
Because you've got physical isolation, you've got significant economic stress, decreased access to people's normal natural supports, as well as whatever treatment supports they might have had.
Mental health providers have set up telehealth sessions to provide treatment, but not everyone is willing or able to use them. Some providers fear overdoses are increasing because people aren't accessing mental health services, including Dr. Chris Eberlein, emergency medicine physician at Gunderson Health System in La Crosse.
We have seen a 50% increase in overdose deaths since COVID has started in our county.
Eberlein says the county has already seen 12 overdose deaths this year, compared to 22 overall last year. As health officials track deaths related to suicide, drug, or alcohol abuse, they caution that they don't yet have a complete picture on the impact of the COVID-19 crisis.
But we do know the importance of people getting the help and support that they need.
That's Robin Mathias. She's the Trauma and Resilient Program Manager with the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. In the last month, the state rolled out its Resilient Wisconsin initiative to provide tools and resources to help people cope.
One of the main things is self-care and really making sure that you're doing things for yourself that build up that more positive energy. So that might be like exercise, it could be meditation. It's not a one-size-fits-all kind of thing.
And everyone's struggles are unique. Betsy Beiler, a mental health counselor in Superior, says it's important for people to give themselves a break and not compare their situation to others.
We all get to experience our own level of loss, grief, whatever, and it doesn't take away from someone else's experience.
She also reminds her clients that one day the quarantine and pandemic will end. Until then, Max Blaska says he's trying to stay busy and keep connected with family and friends.
Isolating is the worst thing to do, but when you're depressed and anxious, it's very hard to reach out.
When others reach out, he says that can often make all the difference. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And this is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.